Tonight we're going to take an excursion to the land of Israel, and we're going to have a look at the present city and the way that the temple fits upon it. We find this is rather interesting in that we can look at the present day Jerusalem, where many of our brethren have visited, and actually envisage in our mind's eye the way it will be when the temple of the future age sits over that very area. And that's what we intend to do tonight, God willing. Now, if we could have a look at plate 13, please, Mark, as a starter, and we will just have a look at some of the landmarks there, and then we'll have a look at the present city of Jerusalem to see how that they coincide one with the other. Tim, you might just operate that light when the time comes, if you wouldn't mind being handy there, please. Now, here we have that one that wants to be inverted, please, Mark, if you could. And we have the plate 13 from Brother Sully's book, which shows us the future temple over the present city, the plan of the present city. And just to refresh your minds, we have certain landmarks given to us in Jeremiah's prophecy, chapter 31, and in Zechariah's prophecy, chapter 14. And we also want to have a look at the spiritual lessons and the exhortation that comes out of this a little later. But we are given the landmarks that the temple of the future age will stretch from the Tower of Hananel, which is the north-east corner of the temple of the future age, the Tower of Hananel, to the Gate of the Corner, which appears to have been a gate on the Harem wall as the wall swung around and curved away round to the west. And so the second point is the Gate of the Corner. Or actually, the Tower of Hananel is this point A here. I said a moment ago the Tower of Hananel was on the northwest corner of the Temple of the Future Age, but that is not correct. I will show you in a moment how we derive that northwest corner, or should I say the northeast corner. But the starting point is the Tower of Hananel, which is marked A on Brother Sully's plate 13. And from the Tower of Hananel to the Gate of the Corner, which is marked B on plate 13, we are then given in the prophecy that it would extend to the hill Gareb. We would like to show tonight that the hill Gareb is the Scabby Hill, or the Hill of the Lepers. And it's known today as the Mount of Offence. If you go to Israel, it's the Mount of Offence. Now, we have therefore the most southern limit of the temple wall, the Mount of Offence. Now, we know that the temple wall is 500 reeds, so we simply come back in a northerly direction, 500 reeds, past the Tower of Hananel, and we arrive at the northeast corner of the temple wall. Now, the prophecy goes on to tell us that the temple must also include the Valley of Hinnom, which will be holy unto the Lord. So therefore, knowing that the temple is a square, and knowing that it must include the Valley of Hinnom, we must draw our southern wall in a westerly direction. If we were to draw it in an easterly direction, it would not include the Valley of Hinnom. We know it must be a right angle. It must include the Valley of Hinnom, so we draw it in an easterly direction for 500 cubits, because 500 reeds, because each wall is 500 reeds long. So therefore, we have two walls of the temple. And knowing that it is a square, it's a simple matter to draw in the other two. And when we do, we find the very centre of the building sits right over the top of Mount Zion, which is rather remarkable. Now, there are other features given in the temple prophecy, such as the hill Gareb, which we would show as this point D, marked on Brother Sully's plate 13, the place called Goath. Very significant spiritual lessons come out of this concerning Israel's history. It has to do with the bellowing of cattle. The bellowing of cattle. We'll see that in a moment or two. Now, again, before we have a look at present-day Jerusalem, we're going to have a look now at present-day Jerusalem from this point here. On our right-hand side of Brother Sully's map, from the Mount of Olives, standing on the Mount of Olives, I want to show you a couple of slides that Brother Merv Islip took when he was in Israel. And when they went there on one of the tours, on one of the Logos tours, they photographed all around eastern and southern walls of Jerusalem, and they stood at this point here on the Mount of Olives and photographed this wall here. So that's the next thing we'll be seeing on the screen, standing on the east of Jerusalem on the right hand side of our screen and looking towards that Jerusalem wall there. We're then going to have a look at a slide from the south, and looking up from the south we will have a look at the city from this angle and see how this will fit upon present day Jerusalem. Now if we could have present day Jerusalem, please Mark, we'll just present day Jerusalem first of all, and then we'll go to the other one next if we may. Now Merv didn't take this one, this is one that I had, you've seen it before, and we are standing on the east of Jerusalem and we are standing on the Mount of Olives and we are looking across the valley to the present day Jerusalem. The Mosque of Omar, and then we have another mosque here a little further south. And this wall here is the one of the building walls of Ezekiel's temple. Ezekiel's temple's wall will run right along that present wall, but it will extend much further to the north, and it will extend all the way to the south to the hill Gareb, or the Scabby Hill. And then if we would look at the most southwestern corner of the temple, we would look in this direction and look past this southernmost mosque and see how that the wall turns around. We mentioned the Tower of Hananel, which is to our right up here, just off the screen, the Tower of Hananel. Then the Gate of the Corner. The Gate of the Corner appears to have been where the wall turned around the corner here. So Brother Sully identifies that spot, the Gate of the Corner. But then it goes on to the hill Gareb, all the way down here over to our left off the screen to the Scabby Leper Hill. So we'll have a look now at another slide, please, if we can have Jerusalem from Olives. And we are having another look at the Gate of the Corner. There's the Mosque of Omar. Here is the other, more southern mosque. And the Tower of Hananel is off our screen to the right. And here we have the Gate of the Corner. As the wall swung around that corner, there was a gate there, and that is that point, Gate of the Corner. That's the building wall of Ezekiel's temple, and it continues in a straight line all the way to the Leper's Hill, again to our right, off the screen at the present time. Now, if we would like to look to the southwestern corner of the future temple, it would be over here. It would be a point right across here, and we'll probably see it a little better in the next slide. When you think that one building is going to be as big as the whole city of Jerusalem, it's a mammoth building. This whole city of Jerusalem will be taken up with just one building in the age to come. This house of prayer for all nations, for Australia, for China, for Russia, for New Zealand, for the USA, for the British Isles, for the West Indies, and for Afghanistan. Afghanistan also will be found to be there worshipping all peoples together in this giant temple of the future age, a house of prayer for all nations. There's never been a time on the face of the earth when all nations have gathered together as God's ecclesia. But in that day, the whole worldwide ecclesia will indeed be worldwide and comprise all nations. And so this mighty temple will exist over such a wide area. Now if we could have the present Jerusalem from the south corner, and before you switch it on, Mark, we are now going to stand on the left of the screen here and have a look up. We will be where we are, but a little further down to our left and the south, still looking across in this direction, still looking in a westerly direction, but a little further south than we are now. And we'll have this one, Jerusalem from the south corner. And it will probably give us a better idea of the way the wall curls around. Now here is that southernmost mosque. The Mosque of Omar is on our right now. We cannot see it, but we can see where the wall turns around. That's the Gate of the Corner. And notice how the wall twists, the old wall of Jerusalem, and turns, twists and turns and winds around. And here is the valley of Hinnom, or Gehenna, the rubbish dump of Jerusalem here to the south. And the Kidron Valley meets at this southern corner. So you have two valleys, the great valley of Jehoshaphat or Kidron, which is on the east of Jerusalem, between Olives and Jerusalem, which meets up with the southern valley of Gehenna, or Hinnom, and it meets at this point in the south here, on the southeast corner. And we're looking across here now. We're almost down to the Leper's Hill when we take this photo. We're almost down as far as the Leper's Hill, the Hill Gairib. We're almost standing on it. It's a little to our left. And we are looking now and we're better able to see the most southern west corner of the temple of the future age. It would be over about at this point here. Now, if we could have a look at Jerusalem from the south, please, Mark. We're going to have a look now, standing right down to the south of Jerusalem. Unfortunately, it's a little bit far away. When the brethren took this photo, they were on one of the southern roads at the south of Jerusalem, way on the other side of the valley of Hinnom, way on the other side of the valley of Gehenna. But here is Gehenna. Now, you can see the big cleft in the earth's surface there. That is the juncture of the valley of Jehoshaphat running north and south, and the valley of Hinnom running east and west. And as the valley of Hinnom runs around Jerusalem, it meets up with the valley of Jehoshaphat, or the Kedron Valley, which then runs north and south up here. Now, here is the Mount of Olives, down into the Kedron Valley, up out of the Kedron Valley to present Jerusalem. Now, here is the Scabby Hill of the Lepers, the Mount of Offence, it's called today. And we believe that the lepers used to congregate there in days gone by in order to come down and to go to the Pool of Siloam in a desire to be healed. That was their only chance of being healed anyway. When the waters were troubled in the Pool of Siloam, that they would go and they would bathe there. And it would appear that they congregated in this area outside the city walls. They were unclean, and they would come down here to the Pool of Siloam on occasions. And so it became known as the Hill of Offence because of the unclean nature of the leper colony that lived there. Now, we'll say more about that tonight, a little later. But here is the juncture of two valleys, the valley of Hinnom and the valley of Kedron. And the valley of Hinnom swings around on the southern side. Now, here is the present city wall. So therefore, the south east corner of Ezekiel's temple will be here at the Hill of the Lepers, and right across here, or off the screen, probably just off the screen, will be the southwestern corner of the temple of the age to come. Now, what a mighty building! There's the present city of Jerusalem. It stretches all the way, the temple stretches all the way across to this hill and right across to this hill. That's just one wall of the temple. So as you come from the south, you will see this massive building, and it will be resplendent in all its glory. So I think now we can have the lights, please, Mark, and we shall have a look. And now we mentioned the Tower of Hananeel. The Tower of Hananeel. And we said that was on the eastern wall at that point marked A on Brother Sully's plan. Now, do we have any confirmation of this, that Brother Sully is right in saying that this is the landmark for the temple? We do, in the Bible Cyclopedia, in Volume 2, page 82, it mentions the Tower of Hananeel in that area. Also, Ellicott's Bible Commentary does. Also, Adam Clark's Bible Commentary. And so there are three other authorities to back up what Brother Sully says, that the Tower of Hananeel was in that area: Bible Cyclopedia, Ellicott's Commentary, Adam Clark's Commentary. So we think that the Tower of Hananeel was at the point marked A on Brother Sully's plan. Now, the next one was the Gate of the Corner, where the wall swung around. Now, that's point B, and it appears to be logical that it should be so, because the wall does swing around at that point. Now, the Hill Gairib, we've said, would be the Hill of the Lepers, on the point we showed there. Now, we have another landmark given to us, which is not in the Jeremiah prophecy, but let's turn over to Zechariah. In Zechariah, there is a further landmark for the future temple in Zechariah 14. Now, whilst you're turning this up, we would make this point, that the land will be all changed by the earthquake, so that its present configurations are of not much importance. It's going to be completely levelled and raised and changed and cleansed by the earthquake. But it's interesting to be able to look at present Jerusalem and say, that's where one wall will be, that's where another wall will be, and that's where the altar will be. to just think that we can look at present Jerusalem and work out where it will be is an interesting and wonderful thing, even though the land will be changed by the earthquake. Now we have a prophecy of Benjamin's gate, Zechariah 14 and verse 10. And the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba, well that's 6 miles to the north of Jerusalem, to Rimmon, that's 28 miles south of Jerusalem, and it shall be lifted up. Notice that the whole land is going to be lifted up. It's going to be lifted up 1,000 feet. And it shall be inhabited in her place. To be inhabited in her place means to abide. When you inhabit somewhere, I inhabit this house, I abide here. So what we're being told is that the temple area will abide in her place. Now why tell us that? Because there's going to be a cataclysmic upheaval with the rocks being rent and the mountains being split and a great tidal wave going around the world as the land lifts up and pushes the Mediterranean back and it washes over the rock of Gibraltar and tidal waves spin around the world and all the low-lying areas are flooded. A terrible catastrophic upheaval as the land goes up 1,000 feet. But what will happen to Jerusalem? It will stay in its place. That's why it will survive. The Jerusalem will abide or be inhabited. It means abide in her place. From Benjamin's gate, now here's this other landmark we're given. From Benjamin's gate unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, and from the Tower of Hananel, now that comes into it again, mentioned by this prophet also, the Tower of Hananel unto the king's wine presses. Now the king's wine presses were also down near the Scabby Hill. Down in the valley, the king's wine presses and gardens were there. So again, it ties up quite nicely. Now, Benjamin's gate, Adam Clark suggests in his commentary that was probably on the north. It was probably on the north. So it's one of those, it's on the northwest corner. Now, remember in Brother Sully's plan, we showed the northernmost wall on the western side, on our right-hand side, to the top and the right, that most northern part, which was 500 reeds from the southern boundary. Now that would be in the area, the approximate area of Benjamin's Gate. Benjamin's Gate wouldn't have been that far north, but that was near Benjamin's Gate because Benjamin had territory in that area. Judah had territory to the south of Jerusalem, and the tribe of Benjamin had territory from Jerusalem northwards. So therefore, if Benjamin had their territory to the north of Jerusalem, they would have logically had a gate on the northern side of Jerusalem leading out into their territory. And the Bible scholars reason that Benjamin's gate must have been on the north. So this would fit in quite well then with the prophecy here. We're given a northern boundary of the temple of the future age in the northwest corner. Now we're also given this back in the other prophecy we went to, Jeremiah 31, the hill Gareb. The hill Gareb. And the measuring line shall go forth. Notice it's a measuring line. It's lining out the area of the temple of the age to come. The measuring line shall go forth over against the hill Gareb. Now, this is in verse 39 of Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31 and 4 and verse 39. And we have the hill Gareb. Now, Gareb in the Hebrew language means scabby. It actually means itchy. Itchy. And Jusenius, that great Hebrew scholar, says the word has the connotation of leprosy. And Dumelow's Bible commentary gives it as the hill of lepers. Now, in Brother Sully's work, he does not go into all this that we have done in conducting this class. He spent a lifetime finding out these things, and the result of his labours he put down in his book. But we have spent time going into other areas of research to try and confirm Brother Sully and to try and show the brethren that Brother Sully is right, and that the more you look into the matter, the more correct you see him to be. And so this is some of our own research that we're bringing out now. What Josephus has to tell us and what Dumelow has to tell us and the other scholars, all confirming what Brother Sully says. Because there are so many who would try and say that Brother Sully was wrong and they would reject his exposition. But we have spent our lifetime looking into all the evidence to show that he's right, that God has raised up a brother in our midst by the name of Henry Sully, who has been the first man in the world to find the answer to the temple of the age to come, and the only man in the world to have done it. And we have spent our time confirming his work and elaborating on his work and further building on his work to try and show that he was indeed correct, and that the more you go into it, the more you find it to be correct. We are not very impressed with those who pull down the foundations of the truth that we have. The work of Dr. Thomas and Robert Roberts and C.C. Walker and John Carter and men like Henry Sully. There are many amongst us who would pull down those foundations and destroy those foundations and try and create a new truth with new doctrines and new ideas. That's destroying the foundations. And if you destroy the foundations, well, we might as well give the whole building away and go and start up another sect. But it has been our life's work to strengthen the foundations and to see how that they are good, true foundations and worthy of our acceptance. And that's our approach in this class, to find all the evidence we can to show how right they were, how right Brother Sully was in this particular class. Now, this hill Gareb, then, we believe Brother Sully is correct in saying that it is the hill Gareb, the amount of offence, and some have laughed at him. Some have laughed at him and said, look, he's got grandiose ideas. There's not going to be a big temple like this in the age to come. It's only a small temple. Fancy saying that the building line goes all the way down to the Mount of Offence, and they have laughed at him. But Dumelow's Bible commentary confirms it, and Jusenius' Hebrew lexicon confirms it, and Dr. Strong in his lexicon says that the word does mean scabby or itchy, and the whole thing does add up to a fact that a leper colony was down there, and that's the landmark that God is giving us and expecting us to understand, that it's a mighty temple extending all the way down to the leper colony. But of course, it'll all be holy in that day. It'll all be cleansed. And even the valley of Hinnom, which was the rubbish dump of Jerusalem, shall be holy in that day. Now, this brook here of Hinnom, and this southwest corner here of the hill Gareb, the Mount of Offence, it was close to Hinnom, to Gehenna, it was to the west of it. And it does seem a natural point for lepers to congregate. They were the unclean ones. Now, there was a village, of course, the village of Siloam, near the pool of Siloam. And the lepers would not be able to congregate inside a city or inside the city walls to any great degree. They were unclean, they were cast out. They used to live at one time in a place called the Valley of the Lepers, and this, we believe, such an area would be down there near Siloam, at the southeast corner of Jerusalem. And this present Mount of Offence then would seem to connect with these ancient days. Now, the Jewish tradition does in fact speak of uncleanliness concerning this hill of offence down here. For example, Solomon is supposed to have dedicated its high places to Chemosh and Moloch. Now, Solomon is supposed to have done this. Hastings Bible Dictionary quotes 1 Kings 7, which we won't look up now, the way Solomon dedicated the high places to Chemosh and to Moloch because of the wives that he'd fallen in love with. And because they were pagans, he was swayed in their direction, and he dedicated this area and the Mount of Offence to these pagan gods. And so it has a history of uncleanliness and a place where lepers used to congregate in later times. Now, Siloam, the pool of Siloam, had an upper pool also called the King's Pool. And it seems likely that this King's Pool watered the gardens of the king down in the area near the Mount of Offence. We think of Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 15 with reference to these things. Now, in this connection, we think of King Uzziah. Now, King Uzziah died a leper. Remember, he was smitten with leprosy, and he died as a leper, and he died as a leper in that very area, we believe, down in the southeast corner there, in this area, near the Mount of Offence. Josephus says that he died down near in that area. Now, it says that he had gardens down there. Now, the pool of Siloam was fed by the Virgin's fountain, and it was considered to be of healing properties. And as we've suggested before, perhaps the lepers congregated there on the nearby Mount of Offence to beg alms of people that they might sustain themselves, to have sufficient provisions to live, but also in the vain hope of being healed if they went into those waters. Now, when Thompson, who wrote Land in the Book, that man who lived in the Holy Land for 25 years, he lived there in the last century, in the 1800s, he, on his travels around Jerusalem in the 1800s on horseback, he mentions a terrible, shocking sight that he got when he saw lepers in that area. And he mentions lepers down there near Zion's Gate in that southern area. So as we've researched this out, everywhere we turn, all the reading we've done, it all adds up. It's all beginning to add up that there were lepers in that area, and that this does seem to be the likely explanation. Now, while we're on this subject, remember the Pool of Bethesda in John chapter 5 and 2. Where does the Pool of Bethesda fit into all this? Well, I believe, it's my opinion, that the Pool of Bethesda, now the Bible dictionaries don't say this, I know, but it's my opinion that the Pool of Bethesda is just another name for that Pool of Siloam in the south east corner of Jerusalem. It's one and the same. And it's the only natural spring in Jerusalem down in that area, and I think that must have been the Pool of Bethesda where they went in to try and be healed when the waters were troubled. And remember how the Lord Jesus Christ and his activities in that area. Now, in conclusion then, Gareb, the hill Gareb, would be Hill of the Lepers, the Mount of Offence. Now, we're going to have a look at what Thompson has to say a little later, but we won't have a look at him on the subject of the lepers. But if you like at your leisure, and anyone who might be listening to the tapes, to read what Thompson has to say on leprosy. Cancer is the great killer in the times in which we live. But in those days it was leprosy. And the effects of leprosy and cancer are very, very similar in their... they're not the same disease, but the effect it has upon the human body is very, very similar. And Thompson was greatly shocked when he came across those lepers living there, unclean and outside the city walls in that area. And it's a wonderful thing to think that in the temple of the age to come, leprosy and cancer and all those things will be eliminated and eradicated, and the whole area will be holy, and there will be health and happiness and joy to mankind throughout the whole world, but particularly in the glorious holy mountain. It'll be beautiful. Now, I'd like now to have a look at another landmark of the temple that we mentioned. That is on the southwest corner, Goath, the place of the bellowing of cattle. Let's have a look in Jeremiah 31 again, verse 39. And the measuring line shall go forth over against the hill Gareb, yes, the hill of the lepers on the south, and shall compass about to Goath. So in other words, take a right angle from that and you come to Goath. Now this site was adjacent to the Gaza Road, which is over in that area, on the south-west corner of Jerusalem, but further west than the present limits of the present city. And apparently, it is related to a place of cattle. The word Goath comes from a Hebrew word gar, to bellow. Now, Hebrew is an onomatopoeic language, and all the words sound like the things they're supposed to represent. Narkish, the hiss of a serpent. And the word for a bellowing of a cat of cattle in Hebrew is supposed to sound like the bellowing of cattle. And if we had the throaty voice of a Hebrew, how he pronounced it, it would be the gar. It would sound like the bellowing of a mooing, the bellowing of an oxen. Gar, to bellow like cattle. Now it's a very rare word, this Hebrew word, this root word gar. It appears only rarely. It appears once. Now I should be more specific there. The root word gar, to bellow like cattle, appears in Scripture, but the word goeth appears but once in the Bible, and the word gar appears twice. So it's one of those rare words which we're encouraged to look at to see what the specific references might mean for us. So gar appears twice, and goeth appears once. Now, if we have a look in 1 Samuel chapter 6, we'll have a look at the Hebrew word gar, to bellow like cattle, and see what it might teach us, and see if it gives us any sort of clue as to what might be happening in Ezekiel's temple. And, as so often is the case, we're taken back into Israel's history. And things we do in our daily reading suddenly come alive with a new interest, and it can take us forward to the future. Now, who would have thought that this in here, in 1 Samuel 6, can relate to Ezekiel's temple? 1 Samuel 6, verse 12. And the kine took the straight way to the way of Beth Shemesh, and went along the highway, lowing as they went, and turned not aside to the right nor to the left, as the lords of the Philistines went after them unto the border of Shemesh. Now, see the word in verse 12 there, the word lowing. Now, this word lowing as they went is the Hebrew word gar, to bellow. And so here we have cattle racing up the highway and bellowing. Now we find that there is significance in it, beautiful significance in this, because this is the a time when the Philistines had captured the Ark, Israel's Ark of the Covenant, Ark of the that was in place in the tabernacle, and this Ark, this most holy piece of furniture, was taken when the Philistines invaded the land. Because of the apostasy of the people, God allowed the Philistines to conquer them and to take the ark, and it was down the Philistine territory. And the Philistines were smitten with a great plague, and they were dying by their thousands and thousands. And they were dying by a plague of mice, which devastated their crops, and a plague of hemorrhoids, or piles, which devastated the people. And they therefore said, take this Hebrew ark and send it back to them. It's only bringing the wrath of Yahweh their God upon us. And so they put it on a cart and they sent it back to Israel. But in order to be sure that it really was, in fact, of their God, they put it on a cart and they took two suckling cows. They took two cows that were suckling calves. And they took their calves from them and locked them up. And they took these two cows and they attached them to the cart. And it was on a new cart. And they then whipped the cows and off they went up the road. Now, no cow would leave its calf behind. And so they knew, the Philistines knew, that if the cows went back to Israel, even though their own calves were left behind, this was something divine, that God was behind it. And that's exactly what happened. The calves were there, and they let the two cows go, and up they went, straight as a die, towards Israel, back to the territory of the Israelites, lowing and gah, bellowing as they went, because they were being driven by the Spirit of God, you see. They were being driven invisibly by the angels. And we don't know how the angels were driving them, pushing them, goading them, pricking them. Invisible though it may be, the angels were driving those cattle back to Israel. And the Philistines couldn't see angels, but they knew this was something divine, because no cow leaves its calf behind. And they were straight off to Israel, bellowing as they went, because the angels would have been prodding them, you see, or in some way driving them back to Israel. So the Philistines knew that this was something divine, and of course they got rid of this troublesome thing, this ark, which had caused so much trouble to them. Now, hence we have the lowing or bellowing of cattle, and the cattle were driven against their nature. Now, Israel, of course, too. The fact that they were cattle has significance for us, because Israel were an ox. Remember the four tribes of Israel, the four main tribes, the ox, the eagle, the lion, and the man? The four standards on the four main tribes, and one of them was an ox, Ephraim. And so the ox stands for Israel, and they had to be goaded into righteousness. They've had to be goaded to go back to their land. God used Hitler to drive them back to the land. They've had to be, the Israel ox have had to be chased back to the land, just as these cattle were being chased by God's angels back to the land. And we think of various scriptures that come to mind, Ecclesiastes 12 and 11, the words of the wise are as goads. And we think of the incessant murmuring of Israel in the wilderness and all their history. And as these cattle were going up the road bellowing, that's the way Israel has been, always bellowing. They murmured in the wilderness. They were always grumbling. They were driven by God, bellowing. They've always been rebellious, and they've always been needed to be driven. And so these two cattle that were doing this were a little type of Israel as a nation that had to be driven back to their land, bellowing as they went. So we think that these lessons will come out when people go to Ezekiel's temple. When people go to the temple and they stand at that south-east-west corner and they are driving their own cattle up for sacrifices, they will say, what is the name of this place? And they will be told it is Goath. And the Hebrew will be explained to them as the bellowing of cattle. And the fact of Israel's history will come before their minds. And there they will be standing in that day in peace, in quiet, with the quiet mooing of the cattle, the gentle murmur of the mooing of the cattle, an atmosphere of peace, as the cattle are being driven up to the northern side to be slaughtered for the sacrifices in the temple. Now, let us also have a look at Ezekiel 36 and verse 24, concerning the fact that Israel have to be driven back to their land. Israel, as we said, were like these goaded cattle that need to be driven back all the time. So in Ezekiel 36:24, where we read, For I will take you, that's Israel, from among the heathen, and gather you out of all countries, and bring you into your own land. Now that word gather is the Hebrew word kabatz, and it comes from a root to grasp. So what God is actually doing is grasping Israel from their lands, back into their lands, out of all countries. That's that word kabatz, from a root to grasp. And it's as though God again has to force them back to their land because of their stubbornness, which is there right to the end. Though we know in the end he will pour upon them the spirit of grace and supplications, and under Elijah they will be wooed back to the land, yet at the present time they have to be driven there. It's only affliction in all the countries of the world that's driving them back now. Why are they back in the land now? Because of the persecutions of Hitler. That's why they went back. They needed to be driven back. The scripture says, I will send hunters to hunt them. And Hitler was one of those hunters in the last war. And they've been driven back. And God says, I will grasp you out of all countries. Again, this rebelliousness of them. But in any case, you know, it's only the children that are going to enter the land. Let's turn to Jeremiah 31 again. And as we do, I would mention this to you, that it's the children that are going to enter the land, because as they all come back under Elijah, they're going to gather on the eastern side over near the Valley of Achor, and they're going to be disciplined there, we believe, for 40 years. And we believe that they will not enter into Jerusalem. They will not enter into the temple. They will all die over there, and only their children will go in. Now, this is something that's not often brought out by Bible students. We know how Israel in the past perished in the wilderness, and their children went into the land under Joshua. We believe, now this is not my idea, this is Brother Thomas's idea, a very Christadelphian idea, which is over 100 years old. Brother Thomas makes the point that in the age to come it'll be the same again, that Israel will perish and live outside the city boundaries and over in the Valley of Achor in the wilderness there, and their children will go in, a purged remnant, a refined remnant, the children will go in. Jeremiah 31 verse 17, where we read, Now there is hope in thine end, saith Yahweh, that thy children shall come again to their own border. Their children shall come again to their own border. And the 18th verse, I have surely heard Ephraim, now Ephraim's the ox, bemoaning himself. Now there it is again, the old ox that can't stop moaning. Israel can't stop bellowing. I have heard Ephraim, the ox. You can imagine in Hebrew how this would sound. It doesn't come out so well in English, but in Hebrew it would be like this. I have heard the old ox bellowing, moaning. Thou hast chastised me, and I was chastised as a bullock. I was chastised as a bullock, unaccustomed to the yoke. Turn thou me, and I shall be turned, for thou art Yahweh my God. The Israel ox bellows as they are goaded back to the land. And there we are. Now, let us go to another quote to show that the children will enter the land. Notice that verse 17, there is hope. Now, that's another interesting point, because they're in the Valley of Achor. Over on the eastern side of Jerusalem is the Valley of Achor, and it means the Valley of Hope. The scripture tells us that. And here we're told here that there is hope, almost telling us, like a jigsaw puzzle, put the two and two together, it's in the Valley of Achor that the children will come into the land, or there's hope that they will. If you teach them correctly, if you teach them and raise them in the admonition of Yahweh, there's a chance that they will come into the land. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 20, and we'll find another reference about the children entering into the land. Ezekiel chapter 20, and at verse 38, where we read, Notice its future. I will purge out from among you the rebels, and then the transgress against me. I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn. Well, that's Australia. God's going to do it. These wealthy Melbourne Jews are going to come out. Wealthy Melbourne Jews. There are some on our radio stations. There are some in our banks. There are some in our hospitals. There are hundreds of wealthy Jewish doctors in our hospitals. They're going to come out of Melbourne. I will purge out among the rebels, and them that transgress against me. I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn, that's Melbourne, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel. God says, I'll bring them out, but they will not enter into the land of Israel. And ye shall know that I am Yahweh. Why won't they enter in? Because they're going to stay in the Valley of Achor, in that wilderness of the peoples there, because they'll be just as stiff-necked as they were in the past. Now, all the Melbourne intelligentsia amongst the Jews, I work with Jewish doctors, they're fine fellows and they're very intelligent, but they're very stubborn, and there's no way in the world they're going to accept the ways of Yahweh. They're going to be just as stubborn as Israel were in the past, and they'll be, I will purge out from among you the rebels and then the transgress against me and bring them forth, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel. Yet we saw in another verse, did we not, that the children, there's hope that the children will go in. So there we are. And all these things remind us, or we're reminded of these things in the place Goath, Gah, the bellowing of cattle, the way that Israel's had to be pushed throughout all of her history. Now, who would have thought, when the Philistines took the ark and put it on a cart and picked two cattle and said, off you go, and knowing that they wouldn't leave because their calves were behind, they tied their calves up, and off they went, invisibly driven by the angels, just like Israel as a nation have been invisibly driven throughout all their history, and will still be driven right up until the time when the Master is here and events that happen at that time. Now, let's turn our attention to another place just near Goath, the Valley of Dead Bodies, or Gehenna. Now, we're speaking about that valley on the south that we looked at, the Valley of Hinnom, hell, if you like, Gehenna, the rubbish dump of Jerusalem, the place where all the refuse was put. Now, a new site will be required for it. Can we have plate 13, please, Mark? We're privileged tonight, by the way, to have Mark Hosey officiate for us on the projector there. And Mark, if we can have plate 13, we'll have a look and see why there has to be a new rubbish dump for Jerusalem. And we shall see that it must be so. Now, here we have plate 13. And here we have the Valley of Hinnom. Now, you can see on the plate 13, it is shown as a light brown area showing the floor of the valley. Now, notice how that the Valley of Hinnom, the rubbish dump of Jerusalem of old, is now inside the temple. And so, therefore, a new site for a rubbish dump must be found. Now, you might ask the question, why do you need a place of refuge anyway? And the reason is because the sacrifices have all the offal and the unclean parts that need to be taken in a place without the camp. So there has to be a rubbish dump for all a million and more sacrifices every day. All the offal that will be produced by such a vast number of slaughtered animals has to be disposed of, and so there will need to be a rubbish dump, and it cannot be in the old Hinnom because that is now inside the temple. It's holy. So we believe that over in this area, on the western side, outside the city walls, well outside the city walls no doubt, over to our left off the screen, way in the distance probably, a clean place, outside the camp, well outside the camp, most probable, that will be the most probable place for the new rubbish dump. And if that is the case, then as the people come up to the temple and go along the outside of the western wall in order to come in on the north to make their sacrifices, they will pass this new rubbish dump over here on our left, or to the east, or to the western side of the temple. And as the other people come through from the south, they, of course, if they are offering on the north, they will pass it as they enter the temple. And if they are, in fact, offering a sacrifice on the south, then they enter the temple by the way of the south, make their sacrifice, continue through the temple in the same way, and they will leave the temple by the northern side, and they will again have to pass along the western wall to get out of the temple. So the point we're making is this, that people have to pass the western wall at least once. Either going or leaving, they have to go along the western wall once. And when they do, they will see that this rubbish dump over here on the left. And that's significant they should. Why? Why is it significant that they should look upon all this place of burning and this place of burning carcasses? Why is it significant that they should look upon it? Well, Let's have a look. We'll have the lights again, please, and look at Isaiah 65 and see why it's significant that they should look upon this place of refuge. No, thanks. Isaiah 65. And it's rather surprising when you go through the prophets, the references to Ezekiel's temple, which you would never have dreamt were there. We know it's to do with Israel's future, but we don't often think of it as to do with the temple. But the point is, the temple is Israel's future. It is the very nerve center of the kingdom. So Isaiah 65, verse 20, there shall be no more an infant of days, nor an old man that hath not filled his days, for the child shall die 100 years old, but the sinner, being 100 years old, shall be accursed. Now, if a person dies at 100 years of age in that day, he'll be considered to be but a child, because people will live to 700, 800 years of age. And they'll be considered to be but children if they die at 100. But the sinner that lives to 100 will truly be accursed. Most people will be purged, and they will be corrected, and their characters will be modified long before they reach 100 years of age. We're not saying that they'll no longer sin, because mortal people will always still have sin. But they will not be considered to be a sinner, an out-and-out sinner, by the time they're 100 years of age. Because in the kingdom, after 100 years in Christ's kingdom, if you're still a sinner, there's something wrong, and that person will be accursed. And Brother Sully suggests he may find himself on the rubbish dump. An out-and-out rebellious sinner, after he's reached the age of 100, will possibly find himself on the rubbish dump. Because remember, when Christ's power was on the earth in the past, people were struck dead. Remember the men that touched the ark, trying to steady the ark, when David brought the ark back on a cart and they were struck dead? And think of all the occasions where God has brought fire down of heaven and consumed sinners. Elijah calling fire down out of heaven, consuming sinners. And so God's power will again be in the earth, and out-and-out sin will not be tolerated in the kingdom age. And so such a person will find themselves possibly in the valley of the new valley of Gehenna. Now let's... another thing too before we leave this. An infant of days. Yes, well, an infant of a few days. There'll be no premature death either. No premature decay. An infant... An infant of days, what it's actually saying is there will be no infant of days, or as the Revised Standard Version says, an infant that lives but a few days. You won't have an infant that only lives a few days in that age, because the healing power of Christ and his saints will be able to correct such things. So that whereas we have a child mortality now, that will not exist. Children will be allowed to live into adulthood, that they might have a chance to serve God, whether they will or whether they won't, it will be their free choice. But you won't have child mortality then. A child mortality rate will be greatly reduced. So you won't have an infant that lives but a few days. Now, the people will, however, on the other hand, live as the days of a tree. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people. Now the olive and the oak and the cedar and the terebinth trees live for centuries. And so we believe that people will live for about 800 years. You might say, why do you think they won't live for 1,000? Well, Adam didn't live for 1,000 years, did he? Because in the day that thou eatest, thou shalt die. And a day with God is as 1,000 years. And so it was necessary, we believe, that Adam had to die before the 1,000 years were up. So that it could be said, in that day that thou eatest, thou wilt die. And he did, within that day of 1,000 years, die. And we would think that when the paradise is brought back again... In a transitory form, the paradise is gradually brought back in the kingdom. It'll be like it was in the Garden of Eden, and they will still not live to 1,000 years, but they will live a large portion of 1,000 years, 500, 600, 700, 800 years of age they will live, and then they will all die before the end of the millennium comes, so that you won't have anyone at the end of the millennium who was alive at the beginning. And then we know that Christ will have the second resurrection and judgment. However, we can leave that section now in Isaiah, and we can go to Isaiah 66 and verse 23 and 24. And we are still on this question of the rubbish dump of Jerusalem, the new place of refuge. Isaiah 66 verse 23, where we read, It shall come to pass from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, that all flesh shall come to worship before me, saith Yahweh. Now here's the point. From one new moon to another, what's that telling us? That means every month. Every month. See, what a simple way it has of expressing it. From one new moon to another. Israel regulated their months by the moon. So what we're being told is every month there'll be a new batch of worshippers to Jerusalem. And as that month passes, they'll go back home to Australia, and a new group will go up from perhaps from a northern part of Australia. And when that month is finished, they'll go home, and they'll come from New Zealand, and they'll come from all other countries. And every month they'll be going up in batches from one new moon to the next, from one month to the next. But as they do, and they shall go forth, this is the worshippers, shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. This is what Brother Sully suggested. Over in the rubbish dump here, the out-and-out sinners will find themselves a smouldering heap. And as people go up there, they will have a salutary warning as they go along the western wall of those that have transgressed against me. For their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. Now, I think there is a double application to this verse. Down further to the south, there is the city of the dead. Hamanah, the city of the dead, where all the Russians that die in the land are buried and all their bones are buried. And there is a great enormous cemetery that's built down there in the south of all the Russian dead. And that when worshippers go up in the age to come, they will go past that cemetery on the way up to the temple. And that will be the city of the dead, the Hamanah, the multitude of Gog. And they will be told, oh, that's where Gog came against Christ in the days when he was setting up his kingdom. And now that's a memorial to all flesh that they should never be so foolish again as to oppose Christ. Now that's the city of the dead that they will look upon when they go forth from one moon to the next to worship Yahweh at the temple. But I believe there's also another application that Brother Sully gives it, that there will actually be a rubbish dump there, and they will actually look upon the place of carcasses where the rebels find themselves in that day. Double application. Now, let's turn to Ezekiel 43 again now on this same theme and piece these prophecies together, a little here, a little there, put it all together, and we find Ezekiel 43 about the place of refuge or the need for a place of refuge. Ezekiel 43:21, where we read, "Thou shalt take the bullock," now we're right in the temple age now, "take the bullock, also of the sin offering, and shall burn it in the appointed place of the house without the sanctuary." Now there we are. That's a repetition of the law of Moses. Under the law of Moses, they used to burn certain parts of the offering in a clean place without the camp. So here we have in the age to come, they are burning part of the offering in an appointed place outside the sanctuary. And that's why we say there has to be such a place. And probably it'll be on the western side so that people can see it as they go forth. So piecing them all together, now let's finally go back to Jeremiah 31 to show that the old valley of Hinnom is now holy. We stated this when we looked at the plate 13 of Brother Sully, but the old valley of Hinnom must be holy, because in Jeremiah 31 and 40, we're told there, "The whole valley of dead bodies," that's the valley of Hinnom, "and of the ashes, and all the fields," note the ashes there, that's also a reference to the sacrifices and things that were taken outside the camp and put there. "All the fields under the brook of Kidron," well, the Kidron is on the east of Jerusalem, and we're talking about the southern corner of Kidron, "under the corner of the horse gate," well, that's on that same area. The horse gate was between Mount Moriah and Ophel, so that's on near Kidron on the south eastern corner of Jerusalem. "Towards the east, it shall be holy unto Yahweh. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever." Now what's that verse telling us? That the rubbish dump will be holy to Yahweh. The valley of dead bodies, that's the rubbish dump. Hinnom, the valley of Hinnom. The valley of dead bodies, or Hinnom, shall be holy. So therefore, that's another reason why we think, that's an indirect reason why Brother Sully must be right. When Brother Sully worked out the size of the temple and fitted it over Jerusalem, was it just coincidence that it included the valley of Hinnom? I mean, he didn't try to draw it that way. He worked out the measurements, he set it over Jerusalem, and he just was guided by what the scripture says, and it just so happened that it included the valley of dead bodies. And doesn't that fit in beautifully with this prophecy here? You know, when I see things like this, I marvel at the brethren in England and other places say that Brother Sully's wrong, that he's got it all back to front, and that his prophecy now is outdated, outmoded, and we should have a rethink. I marvel that they can say such things, because look at this little incidental way in which he proves to be right. This prophecy says that the rubbish dump, the Valley of Dead Bodies, has to be holy. And Brother Sully is the only one who has drawn a temple, including the old rubbish dump within its limits, so that it would be holy. Just another incidental proof that he's right. Truly, you know, God has raised up a man for us in Henry Sully. And it's a pity that he isn't more recognised for the great work that he did, a lifetime, to give us these very things. And you might say, well, what's so important about it? What's important about it? This temple is the very centre of the kingdom of God on earth. If you look down upon our planet from a spaceship in the age to come, if you look down from a satellite, you would see the centre of the earth is Israel. And you would see the centre of Israel is Jerusalem, and the centre of that is Ezekiel's temple. It's the very centre of the earth. What's important about it? Brother Sully has spent a lifetime on the most important aspect of the kingdom. So I certainly honour him. The scripture says to give honour where honour is due, and to render double honour to those who labour in word and doctrine. And he was such a one who did. And I'm looking forward to meeting him in the kingdom and shaking his hand and talking with him, if we all should be found worthy. Now, concerning the rubbish dump of old, it's known as Gehenna in the New Testament. Now, when I looked up the number of times that Gehenna occurred in the Old Testament, I was not surprised at what one would expect. It occurred 13 times, and 13 is the number of rebellion. In Scripture, 13 is the number of rebellion. And how appropriate that Gehenna should be mentioned 13 times exactly in the Old Testament. As we've said, that Valley of Hinnom was noted for its idolatry. Whilst it was a rubbish dump, they made it a rubbish dump in order that they might never again commit the idolatrous rites that were practiced there. Before it became a rubbish dump, it was a place that was revered by Solomon as a high place to worship the gods. And it was called Tophet. Tophet, T-O-P-H-E-T. And cruel sacrifices of the children were offered there. Now, it's hard to imagine that the Israelites would take their own little children and burn them to death to the gods in the valley of Tophet or Hinnom. But that's what they did. They sacrificed their own little children to Moloch and to Baal. Moloch was an Ammonite god. Baal was a Canaanite god. And they sacrificed them there. But note the contrast in the future age, because now the area is set apart for the offerings to God, not offerings to Moloch. And when people go up in the age to come and they see this great extent of the temple, they will be told that here, in the days gone by, the idolatrous nations worshipped Moloch and these pagan gods, but now all sacrifices ascend to the one true God. That very place, where the Valley of Hinnom will be, on the south here, will be used for the storehouses in the age to come. That's where they will store the first fruits. When people go up from countries such as Australia, it's a long way to go, so we can't take fresh fruit. We will be immortal then, but we will be taking up people from Australia and who are mortals, and they will be taking up fruits and other offerings, the first fruits of their crops. But it will be too far to go all the way from Melbourne up to Zion to take fresh fruit. So they will take dried fruit, the way they did in Israel in the past. Those that lived on the extremities of the land took dried fruit, and those that lived close took fresh fruit, so that when they got there, there were dried fruit and fresh fruit to have a wonderful feast of fat things for all the peoples. It was an offering to God, but also a feast for the peoples. And it'll be the same in the age to come. People from remote areas will take dried fruits and dried products, and those that are close will take fresh ones. And so all will be there in those days. And the storehouses for it all will be on the south, in the very area where it used to be a place of offerings to pagan gods. But now it won't be offering to pagan gods. It'll be first fruit brought up from Melbourne to offer to the one true God. How wonderful the whole thing is. God has taken a nasty, terrible thing in Jerusalem and made it a beautiful thing in the age to come. And the contrast between the old nasty and the new beautiful only makes that contrast all the more striking. Now, Jeremiah 19, let's have a look at this. Jeremiah 19 and verse 2. in this verse we see, go forth into the valley of the son of Hinnom. Now here's, in the past, this valley of Hinnom, this infamous place where they used to offer their own children in sacrifice, which is by the entry of the east gate, and proclaim there the words that I shall tell thee. And then verse 4, because they have forsaken me, and have estranged this place, and have burnt incense in it to other gods, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of innocents. Little innocent children were killed there.